Hello, and welcome to Business Talk, brought to you by Business West and sponsored by People's Bank. Hi, I'm Chris Kellogg from the Kellogg Crew Morning Show on 94.7 WMAS. And I'd like to introduce the host of this week's episode. He's the editor of Business West. Here's Joe Bednar.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Business Talk. We have a great show for you today, but first we have this important message from our sponsor, People's Bank.
Thank you for listening to the Business Talk podcast, sponsored by People's Bank, bringing you the best in business experts, entrepreneurs, and evangelists. Make Business Talk your innovation break for ideas and inspiration. People's Bank, where commercial banking can fuel your growth and make work life easier. Member FDIC, DIF Equal Housing Lender. Bank at peoples.com/business.
Okay, we're back. You know, a famous Springfield resident once wrote, "If I ran the zoo," and today our guest is someone who actually does. It's Sarah Titzo, Executive Director of the Zoo and Forest Park and Education Center. Welcome to Business Talk, Sarah.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks so much for having me.
So I've known you for probably almost 2 decades now, and it's always great to talk to you. So thanks so much for coming on. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and what you were doing before the zoo and then what eventually brought you there?
Well, I had been involved with a number of Springfield-based and just in general regional-based nonprofit organizations, including both Springfield Boys and Girls Clubs, the Food Bank of Western Mass, Greater Springfield Habitat for Humanity, the East of the River Chamber of Commerce. I was really invested in our regional nonprofit community and wanting to make sure that our residents, both four-legged and two-legged, were receiving the best possible services from the organizations that do so much good work in our community. So I spent a lot of time in various nonprofits before I came to the zoo. The board actually approached me about coming to the zoo. They were sort of at a crossroads. They were in some financial difficulties. That was no secret. That was a very well-publicized struggle for the zoo back in the mid-2010s. And they were trying to make some really hard decisions about what to do and what the future of the zoo was going to look like. So they brought me in the middle of 2017 to take a look at the books, take a look at operations, and help them decide, could we make a go of the zoo? And after a very long time of looking through everything, interviewing board members, stakeholders, staff, you know, we came to the conclusion that we could do it, but it was going to be a lot of hard work. And I'm happy to report that, you know, now 7 years later, going on 8 years later, the zoo is financially stable. We're bringing in more visitors than ever. We've adjusted our mission to more accurately reflect the work that we're doing and the work that's needed within the community. We've expanded our reach outside of our gates, and we've really engaged the community in some new and meaningful ways. So I would say it's been successful, but it was really at the prompting and with the leadership of the board of directors. I just can't say enough about the folks who stuck it out and made sure that this 132-year-old treasure stayed a part of our community.
I don't think I realized that far back. That really is something. You said in the past that the Forest Park Zoo's model is one of education, conservation, and rehabilitation. Tell me about the work you do, the work that you and your team do around each of those.
So that was really, you know, the board and I talked about philosophy and mission back in 2018 and sort of was our mission and what people believed we were doing out in the community really reflective of the work happening inside. And we found it wasn't, which is why we sort of looked at those three tenets as every decision we make will fall under one of those three areas of our new mission, which is education, conservation, and rehabilitation. So from an education perspective, we have exploded in the community. We really took this outside of the zoo and bring our education programs into schools, libraries, senior centers, other nonprofit organizations, after school programs, all across the region. It's certainly not just Springfield based. We go out as far as Pittsfield, we're out as far as Central Mass, we're down in Connecticut. So we really go within probably a 90-minute in every direction span where we are working with all kinds of groups, both young and not so young, that want to bring some sort of animal education to the people they're serving. And we love doing that. We really have taken that as a serious mantle of ours to help educate the public, not just about animals, but about how we as humans have a real role to play in making sure that our ecosystem is maintained. You know, we talk a lot about misconceptions about animals. We talk a lot about our impact on the food chain for animals and habitats. And we really want to make sure that people have an understanding about how we can all live together in harmony. I know that sounds a little spacey, but it's really sort of something we believe in wholeheartedly, that we need to make sure that everyone has an understanding of the wildlife in their backyard.
And the education part, it really it dovetails, doesn't it, with the rehabilitation and conservation, in the way that you can teach visitors and, as you said, out in the community about animal care, endangered species, and all these important things, right?
100%. And part of that mission shift was that we no longer are taking in these exotic animals. Lots of people have memories of the zoo back when the monkey house was in existence and when we had bears and we had Morganetta the elephant, which to me are totally inappropriate animals to have in a zoo our size, in a climate here in New England that we have, and these exotic animals that don't really belong here. So what we have really focused on instead is, of course, the animals that have lived with us for 10, 20, 25, 30 years that may be a little more exotic, they'll live with us forever. This is their home. The people in the zoo are the people they know. But as we move forward, we're really focused on only bringing in animals that have been deemed non-releasable by a wildlife rehabilitator. Maybe they've been orphaned or injured or have a permanent disability that prevents their survival on their own in the wild. We are working with wildlife rehabilitators across the country to bring in animals that maybe only have one eye or three legs, or, you know, have some other issue going on that means they cannot be on their own and they need a safe, permanent home. And we are providing that. And on the other side around education, we take that opportunity to really show people how, again, we are impacting these species and how we can do better. And part of that is really just giving people access, but also on each of our exhibits, you'll find that we have signs, not just about the species, but about that specific animal, what its name is, how it came to us, when it came to us, some facts about it in the wild, some fun facts about that particular animal and their likes and dislikes. We want our guests to know our animals, love our animals, and really come to form a deep connection with them. And part of that is that we are now out in the community doing a program called Kids Go Wild. Our director of education, Caroline Adams, is remarkable. She has a master's degree in early childhood education, and she created almost 30 lessons that are based on Massachusetts state curriculum standards that have all aspects of STEAM integrated into them. They're hands-on, they're experimental, they have art components to them, literacy components to them, and we're delivering those in after-school programs at places like the Gray House, at Springfield Prep Charter School, at Square One, at Girls Inc., at Boys and Girls Clubs. We are really expanding this program for those who may not have access to this very specific and very unique, innovative type of learning. And as a result, we've actually won 2 awards nationally for our Kids Go Wild program. And we're really pleased to be able to offer that to our community. And through grants, most of these programs we're offering, we're able to do free of charge.
Do you feel like it's important that programs out in the community are important in another sense, that it's exposing a new generation to the zoo that might not have, and they might want to come there and their families might want to support it down the line?
Absolutely. And that's such an important aspect, Joe. You know, a lot of people believe that we are a part of the city of Springfield, that we are funded by the city of Springfield. We are not. We are a private nonprofit organization that relies on our visitors, that relies on memberships, that relies on donations and other types of community support, without which we would not be able to operate. So, you know, we're this little 4.5-acre oasis inside Forest Park that's completely on its own in terms of its budget. We do rent the space from the city of Springfield, so we do have a relationship with the city, but we are our own entity when it comes to finances. So educating that next generation and their families and making sure they have that connection to us and our animals is critical to our long-term sustainability. And I think we're finding some success there. In 2023, the Greater Springfield Convention and Visitors Bureau did a visitor survey, an independent visitor survey. And what they found in that visitor profile is that for all attractions in our area, the only ones that beat us in terms of the number of people visiting while they were in town was Yankee Candle, Six Flags, the Big E, and MGM Springfield. We have no budget. We are a tiny, tiny little organization. We have no marketing budget. And we are up there with the big boys, so to speak, in terms of what people are doing when they come to our region. So from a tourism and economic development standpoint, we're an important asset for not only Springfield, but for the region in general. And I think that slips under the radar sometimes.
Considering that success of visitorship, the fact that you're only open, like, was it 5 months a year? That's got to be a challenge to keep it funded year round, right?
It's definitely a challenge. We're closed to the public right now. And that's another question we are asked often. What happens to the animals in the winter? And the answer is they live with us all year, 365 days a year. So even when our gates are closed to the public, we are all still there working. The animals are there living, and we're caring for them every day, no matter if it's a snowstorm, no matter if there's a flood. We are there. Our team is there. And that's part of why we need this type of community support, because we aren't open all year, and we aren't able to garner that revenue from admissions and from some of these other things that we do in the high season all year round. So it's critical for us to continue to be present and to be visible in the community, even in those months when we're not open to the public.
You're listening to Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West and sponsored by People's Bank. We're talking today with Sarah Titzo, the executive director of Forest Park Zoo. You mentioned the types of animals you bring in that might need rehabilitation. Are they coming from a lot of different places, and are there any specific examples that might be interesting to our listeners to hear about?
Sure. Yes, they're coming from all over the country. We have eagles from Alaska. We have, you know, lots of animals from up and down the eastern seaboard from different rehab centers and facilities that needed to find permanent homes. We actually took in about 50 animals during COVID from a facility down in New Jersey that was forced to close its doors and was really scrambling to find homes for many of the animals that lived there. And so we provided a home for many of those animals during COVID. So, you know, we do try and be a resource for those when we can. We're obviously very small, and, you know, space is at a premium for us. We are, you know, maxed out when it comes to, you know, the number of animals we can serve, but we really are trying to be that resource, not just locally. We do take some of our animals have come from local rehabbers, but many come from outside the region. And one good example you had asked for, we have two beavers, and we love our beavers. They're amazing. And a lot of people haven't seen beavers up close and personal, and ours are very, very friendly and will come right up to the fence. So we had one. His name was Justin Beaver, and he needed a friend. So we were sort of on the lookout for rehabbers that might have a female beaver that we could acquire at some point to keep Justin company. And we did find in South Carolina, actually, a very young beaver. So her family was killed by authorities. They destroyed the dam, killed the family. This one baby remained, and she was only a few weeks old when rehabbers scooped her up from the site where the rest of her family was killed. And the problem became that in South Carolina, it was not legal to keep beavers or re-release rehabilitated beavers. So the only option was move that baby beaver out of state or euthanize her. So we worked very closely with those South Carolina rehabbers and brought her, as soon as she was physically able and a little bit older and stronger, we brought her up, and she now swims in their pond and is BFFs with Justin Beaver. And so she's a great example of how some states have very restrictive laws around what they can and cannot do with wildlife. And so that even animals that maybe could have been rehabbed perhaps and released, the state won't allow that. So they have to come up with another more creative solution. So by the time she was old enough, she was not able to be released. Beavers are funny, actually. They stay with their parents for 2 full years after they're born. They're not one of those species that sort of kick the baby bird out of the nest, so to speak. They really stay with their families for extended periods of time. So for someone like Cedar, whose family was gone within, you know, weeks of her birth, she really didn't have much of a shot at surviving. So we're very happy to have her now. Justin could not be more thrilled to have her as his companion. And the two of them are just so cute and can be found most afternoons swimming in their pond.
It's a great story. You mentioned, I think, in briefly earlier, that you offer an internship program for college students, I guess, studying animal science, veterinary care, fields like that. How does that benefit both the interns and the zoo itself?
I look at our internship program like an economic development opportunity. We talk a lot here in Western Massachusetts about how do we get young professionals to stay here after they've completed college? How do we get them connected to our community in a way that they want to live here, stay here, pay taxes here, put their kids in school here? And I think our internship program is a great example of how if we provide some really unique and interesting ways for students who are finishing up their course of study to get some on-the-job experience and make those connections locally, we have a better shot at keeping these prospective employees and these people who are going to do wonderful things for our communities. So our internship program, we actually developed a couple of years ago. We've always had an internship program, but we decided to formalize it. So last summer was our very first year where over the summer, which is when we have the most interns, we created a whole curriculum around it where there were benchmarks for our interns to meet and projects they had to complete for successful completion of the internship program and the credits they were going to receive from their schools. And we received an award actually from the Zoological Association of America in October of this year for that program, because it is an innovative way to teach up-and-coming zookeepers, up-and-coming veterinarians, vet techs, anyone who's interested in biology. It's an interesting way to teach them hands-on lessons that they'll always take with them. And I can share with you, our internship program has been so effective over the years. Our current curator, so that's the person in charge of our entire animal collection and facilities, her name is Emily Bauer. She was a high school intern with us, then a college intern, and has never worked anywhere other than the Zoo and Forest Park, and now runs that entire side of things. Secondarily, our veterinarian, Dr. Samantha King, was also an intern at the zoo and worked with us for many years during her veterinary school, and now is our zoo veterinarian. So we keep these connections to our interns in deep and meaningful ways over the years. I can't tell you how many people who currently or have worked for us came up through that internship program. We love hiring from within. We love seeing these interns grow into these wonderful animal care professionals. So for us, that internship program is about way more than just having some kids in for, you know, 12 to 15 weeks during the summer and saying goodbye to them at the end. We really want to stay connected to them.
That's a great testimony of the effectiveness of the program, for sure. You know, the Forest Park Zoo is such an intergenerational experience, and as you said, it's been around forever. And you told me once that you'd take your own daughter, who's in college now, all the time when she was younger, and you guys lived in Forest Park. How meaningful an experience is this for families locally?
You hit the nail on the head. It's intergenerational. The number of people who come with their children and grandchildren, nieces and nephews, who say things like, I spent every weekend here as a child, and I wanted nothing more than to be able to bring my children, my grandchildren, to this place so that they could experience the same things that I experienced. And of course, the experience is different now. And, you know, that is not lost on a lot of our, you know, older visitors, that, you know, it's not the same now, but in many ways, it's so much better. It's so much better because it's intentional. We really are working to make a difference in the animal world, in the ecological world. And that's very apparent to those who maybe haven't been to visit us in a little while, who remember things that, you know, maybe weren't so flattering. Trust me, I've lived in this neck of the woods my whole life. And I remember, you know, not so flattering articles that had come out over the years about things that were going on at the zoo. I can tell you, those days are over. I'm committed to this organization, to this mission. I lived in that neighborhood for most of my adult life. My daughter and I spent many, many days there, birthday parties. It's an important piece of not just that neighborhood, certainly that neighborhood, but not just that neighborhood. We have to keep Springfield's history going. We have to keep these resources and assets available for the next generation and the next generation. And I really consider myself nothing but a steward of that and making sure that during my tenure, I do all I can to keep this thing going for another 132 years.
Before we go, let's let people know how to get to the zoo and when. I know you're opening up in a few weeks. I think there's an event to start the season. Tell us about the season, ticket prices, season passes, anything that people need to know that might want to visit.
Sure. All of the information on ticket prices, on memberships, and all of that is available on our website, forestparkzoo.com. We keep it nice and easy for you. But in general terms, we open the last weekend of March every year, weather depending. This year, let's keep our fingers crossed. There's no snow now. Let's hope that continues. And we do open this year with our big Easter event. So that event always obviously is dependent on when Easter falls. This year, it happens to fall on our opening weekend. So the very first day we're open, which is Saturday, March 30th, we will have over 1,000 people at the zoo. This is probably one of our biggest events of the year, every year. People love getting out and you know, shedding their winter coats in favor of getting outside for a little bit. So we are really excited to welcome everyone back with a bang on our very first day, March 30th. Tickets are available on our website for that. That is a pre-purchase ticket event only because we do tend to sell out. So that is an event where you have to buy your tickets in advance. The best bet for us is always membership. For a family of five, you can come to the zoo for an unlimited number of times for about $100 a year. So for a family of five, you know, you come once or twice, you've already paid for your membership. We try and keep those prices low with a nod to sort of where we are and an understanding of what can be difficult for families. In that same vein, we also sell library passes. So for those who even struggle with the admission price or can't do a membership, we have about 45 local libraries that have zoo passes on file. So anyone can walk into any of their local libraries and say, hey, do you guys have a zoo pass? And you can get free passes to the zoo for up to five people as long as someone else hasn't checked it out. So we really are always trying to make sure that we're accessible to everyone, to not just those who can, you know, pay the admission prices or who can buy a membership.
Thanks for all that info. And thank you so much for spending this time with me today. I really always enjoy talking to you, Sarah. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Joe.
And thanks to all of you for tuning into Business Talk, a podcast presented by Business West, sponsored by People's Bank. I'm Joe Bednar, the editor of Business West, and we'll see you next time.